Hello, this is Randy Thompson from the North Carolina Reading Service. Welcome to Music Review. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. For the next half hour, I shall be reading articles about music from such sources as the New York Times, the News and Observer, The Week Magazine, Rolling Stone, and Entertainment Weekly. Music Review is underwritten by Bill McClure, tuning pianos in the Raleigh area since 1968. For more information or to schedule a piano tuning appointment, please call 919-779-1755. This program is designed to provide the latest coverage of classical folk, jazz, blues, rock, country, and pop music news. But first, these musical trivia questions. Today's trivia questions come to us from the website onthisday.com. Question number one, it was on this very day back in which year that the television series American Idol debuted? Was that A, 1979? Was it B, 1988? Was it C, 1995? Or D, 2002? Or E, 2010? American Idol's premiere, what year was that anyway? And question number two, it was on this very day back in 1989 that Graceland opened a special display of cars owned by Elvis Presley. How many of Elvis's cars were on display? Was it A, just one, his pink Cadillac? Was it B, all 10 of the cars he owned? Was it C, just over 20 of Elvis's cars? Or was it D, almost all of the 97 cars owned by Elvis? So, how many of Elvis's cars were included in this special exhibit? The answers to these two important trivia questions will be given, as usual, at the end of today's program. Our transitions come to us from the website onthisday.com, and today, quote-unquote, is the weekend of June the 10th. Well, it was on this very day, back in 1864, that German romantic composer, conductor, and musician Richard George Strauss was born. Richard George Strauss was especially known for his operas and symphonic tone poems, one of which was featured in the film 2001, A Space Odyssey, and in the BBC coverage of the Apollo moon landings. And it was 7 years ago today, 2015, that Dave Grohl of the Foo Fighters fell off the stage and broke his leg at a concert in Sweden. He had his leg set backstage and returned to perform more songs. 2015, today.
Back on times we had, I hope you smile and know that through the good and through the bad, I was on your side when nobody could hold us down. We claimed the brightest star and we came so far and no.
Carrie Underwood introduces our country music news. It's entitled, Carrie Underwood Had a Snake Encounter That Left Her Shaking. This is published in tasteofcountry.com on the 6th of June, 2022. Carrie Underwood is quite the daredevil, but even the woman who performed a gravity-defying acrobatic stunt during her performance at the CMT Music Awards can get a little frightened. Via social media, the ghost story singer shared video of an unexpected visitor at her home. It was a long snake that had found its way into what appears to be her gardening shed. Oh, you scared me, bud, Underwood says from behind the camera, showing the snake in view. Look how long this sucker is. Whoa! It sounds like she found that sucker right by the door. Underwood was startled by the encounter and even says she was still shaking while filming the video. Appropriately, she informs the snake in her best mom voice that she will be leaving the door open for him to vacate the building. Well, nice to meet you, she jokes. Catch a mouse or two. I'm going to leave you alone now, and I fully expect you to go away. Underwood is very accustomed to country living after being raised on a farm in Checotah, Oklahoma, so it's not likely this is her first encounter with a rogue critter. Currently, she lives on a sprawling 400-acre ranch in Tennessee with horse stables and a lake. In 2016, she told Country Living that she and her husband, Mike Fisher, were building their dream home. Up next, the country singer will release her ninth studio album, Denim and Rhinestones, on June the 10th. Her accompanying tour will get underway on October 15th and run through March 17th. Underwood has also mentioned she will be headed back to Vegas for more of her Reflection, the Las Vegas residency, shows in 2023. And in classical music news, we have this article titled, 308-year-old Stradivarius violin played on Wizard of Oz soundtrack could sell for record 14 million pounds. This is published in ClassicFM.com on the 28th of April, 2022, by Maddie Shaw Roberts. The prized violin, heard on the soundtracks of several Golden Age Hollywood films, could break a new auction record. A 308-year-old Stradivarius violin that was played on The Wizard of Oz, 1939, and other Golden Age Hollywood soundtracks could become the most expensive instrument ever sold at auction. Made in 1714 by great Italian luthier Antonio Stradivari, it was brought to particular fame more than 200 years later when it opened Judy Garland's original recording of Over the Rainbow. The expectation for this violin is around 14 million pounds, but it could go for even higher, he added. It has all the best ingredients for a collector and an investor. It was made by the greatest violin maker in the world during the Golden Period. Its attachment to the Wizard of Oz also brings with it a romanticism which is attractive to so many people. The violin's history is made even more special by its previous owner, Russian violinist Tosha Seidel, who owned the beloved instrument for 40 years. Born in 1899 in Odessa, now Ukraine, Seidel is remembered as one of the finest violin virtuosos of the 20th century and once said of this violin, "We precisely suit each other." Seidel recorded several early Hollywood film scores with it, including Over the Rainbow from The Wizard of Oz, Intermezzo, and Melody for Three. Since Seidel's death, the violin has been owned by multiple musicians and private collectors. Almost 50 years since its last sale, it has been put up for auction. The emotional connection to that story is universal. Even if you are not an expert in classical music, you will have grown up with The Wizard of Oz. When people understand that this violin was used by the principal solo violinist in that movie, they identify with it immediately. Before it lands at the New York-based auction house this June, the violin will be showcased in London, Berlin, Shanghai, Hong Kong, Tokyo, and Beijing. And in jazz music news, we have this obituary. Gretchen Moncur III, jazz trombonist whose fluency and imagination made his instrument relevant in the modern jazz world of the 1960s. This is written by Richard Williams on the 6th of June, 2022, and published in TheGuardian.com. The American jazz trombonist Gretchen Moncur III, who has died on his 85th birthday, was among the first to show that a place for his instrument existed in the avant-garde of the 1960s. Moncur was born in New York City. His mother, Ella, was a beautician, and his father, Gretchen Moncur II, the son of an immigrant from the Bahamas, played the double bass with the Savoy Sultans, a popular band with a residency at the Savoy Ballroom in Harlem. He grew up in Newark, New Jersey, in a house often visited by leading musicians, including the singer Sarah Vaughan, his mother's best friend. His first instruments were the cello and the piano, but at 9 he switched to the trombone, which he studied at the Lorenberg Institute in North Carolina, a historically black preparatory school with a renowned music department whose previous alumni included Dizzy Gillespie. His mother had sent him there at the age of 14, he told an interviewer, to get him away from the increasing presence of drugs in his hometown. When he returned home to continue his studies at the Manhattan School of Music and the Juilliard Conservatory, his first professional experience came with the Newark-based big band of the pianist Nat Phipps, in whose ranks he met Shorter. After leaving Juilliard because he could no longer afford the tuition fees, he joined the band of the singer Ray Charles, where he spent a year and a half, alongside such veterans as the celebrated saxophonist Hank Crawford and David Fathead Newman. And in music research and technology, we have this article entitled, Is the CD Revival an Actual Thing? Indie record stores and Gen Z listeners attest that in a small but meaningful way, the silver discs are enjoying a cultural renaissance. This is written by Mark Hogan, published in Pitchfork.com on the 3rd of February, 2022. For a 40-year-old format that peaked in Y2K, the CD has sparked an awful lot of debate lately. In mid-January, Rolling Stone's Rob Sheffield wrote an endearing love letter to compact discs, provocatively headlined, Jewel Box Heroes, Why the CD Revival is Finally Here. Less than a week later, musician and writer Damon Krukowski offered a thoughtful counterpoint with a catchy title of its own, There Is No CD Revival. For music lovers trying to keep up, it might not only be the shiny plastic circles that are spinning. Setting off this online brouhaha was a small but remarkable statistic. According to industry tracker MRC data, CD sales rose last year for the first time since 2004. Up until then, CD sales had fallen for 20 straight years. By comparison, vinyl sales have risen 15 straight years. Total spending on CDs is still less than half of that of vinyl, let alone streaming, which accounted for 84% of recording industry's revenue in the first half of 2021. So as the pandemic continues to hit artists' touring income and the dominant streamer sides with a shock jock, any pronouncement of a CD revival seems understandably contentious. The article skips down and ends with this. The common theory that pop culture nostalgia runs in roughly 20-year cycles has long suggested that a CD comeback would happen right about now, despite whatever advances in technology had come along. There's a particular novelty in a generation remembering something that perhaps barely existed when they were kids. In 2010, sparked by my own reporting on the small-scale resurgence of cassettes, the critic Tom Ewing wrote a brilliant Pitchfork column in which he speculatively imagined a similar reemergence of CD culture years later. The fictitious publication date for Ewing's piece, March 2022.
Shining through the window, let me know everything's all right.
Summer breeze makes me feel fine, blowing through the jasmine in my mind.
Seals and Crofts' Summer Breeze introduces our rock and pop music news. It's an obituary, Jim Seals. This is published in UltimateClassicRock.com on June the 7th, 2022. Jim Seals of Seals and Crofts died on Monday at age 80, according to friends and family. The cause of death wasn't immediately released. Seals was the principal lyricist and singer behind 8 top 40 hits in the 70s. Seals and Crofts rose as high as number 6 on the singles chart 3 times, with 1972's Summer Breeze, 1973's Diamond Girl, and 1976's Get Closer. He'd stopped playing music in 2017 after reportedly suffering a stroke. My heart just breaks for his wife Ruby and their children, cousin Brady Seals of the country band Little Texas, told Variety. Please keep them in your prayers. What an incredible legacy he leaves behind. Born in 1942 at Sidney, Texas, to oil man Waylon Seals and his wife Cora, James Eugene Seals began his career as a member of the Champs with Glenn Campbell, joining after they hit with Tequila. He toured with Eddie Cochran before initially working with Dash Crofts during a subsequent stint with Campbell. They built their career show by show, while Seals and Crofts' first 3 albums were largely ignored. We were lucky, Seals told Melody Maker in 1975. We came along at a time when Chicago, Jethro Tull, and the Moody Blues and people like that would have us as a support band.
Summer breeze makes me feel fine.
Skyline photo, skyscrapers shine the sun so low in the sky. The secretaries at the hot dog vendors, cabs honk at the bicycle messengers, rolling by.
And in music news from this capital city, local. As Maren Morris launches tour in North Carolina, she believes in pay it forward moments. This is published in the News and Observer on the 1st of June, 2022, by Kate Murphy. Award-winning country music star Maren Morris was ready to go on tour with a newborn baby in 2020 when the COVID-19 pandemic canceled those plans and put her on a different path, one that led to a new album, Humble Quest, and a new tour that's kicking off in Raleigh this month. I'm excited with the new record being able to play that live, says Morris, who will still bring her now 2-year-old son Hayes out on the road. Performing her hit, The Bones, always creates a really emotional moment in her shows, and she usually ends her set with My Church, because that's the one that gets everyone clapping. Plus, it just feels like a spiritual moment in a lot of ways, she told the News and Observer. But she's excited to perform songs like Nervous, Humble Quest, and Tall Guys for a crowd and see how those translate with her audience.
I can't wake up, shaking up. Maybe we should break up.
Maren Morris, 32, began writing the songs that became the Humble Quest album during the pandemic at home with her husband, Ryan Hurd, and their then newborn son. She struggled with postpartum depression, grieving the death of her close friend and collaborator, Busby, who had brain cancer, and adapting during the pandemic when concerts and performances were canceled. Meanwhile, she won her first Female Vocalist of the Year award at the 2020 Country Music Awards, and her single, The Bones, became a top country hit, earning Morris 3 CMA awards and a Grammy nomination for Best Country Song. Through those life events, she found herself reckoning with humility in ways she'd never imagined, and a breakthrough for her third album, according to her bio. There are so many things that ended up knocking me down a peg, but strengthening me and making me realize what I can withstand, Morris says in her bio. That's why I wanted to name that album after that, because it was just such a humbling experience to make. And I didn't want it to feel heavy. I wanted to have it sort of to be an antidote to this time. Now that her son Hayes is 2, she expects traveling on the bus with him will be a little bit easier because he can walk, chat, sleep in a bunk, and enjoy activities like Raleigh's Marbles Kids Museum with friends and family who will come to town for opening weekend. We'll see how soon he takes over the bus with all of his stuff, Morris said, laughing. The singer-songwriter spoke with the NNO ahead of her upcoming headlining Humble Quest tour that launches June the 9th at Red Hat Amphitheater in Raleigh. She performs June 10th in Asheville, then returns to North Carolina for 2 more shows, Charlotte on June 16 and Wilmington on June 17. So how'd you do on today's trivia questions? Well, the answer to our first question, it was on this very day, back in which year, that the television series American Idol debuted. Was that A, 1979, B, 1988, C, 1995, D, 2002, or E, 2010? Correct answer. Answer D, the television series American Idol debuted 20 years ago today, back in 2002. The show featured judges Randy Jackson, Paula Abdul, and Simon Cowell. An IMDb.com article provides this storyline. 12 finalists and or future singers, 6 men and 6 women, who were selected from America, compete in a talent contest in which they were asked to sing any song they like on this Star Search clone. After each song that was sung, the judges, Abdul, Jackson, and Cowell, then critiqued the finalists' chosen song. After each show's ending, America must vote for a finalist to whom they really think their performance is good, using cellular phone to cast votes with. Once the votes are locked in, the judges and America decides who has the most and the least amount of votes, and the contestant with the least amount of votes is eliminated, and it goes on each week's show until the winner is crowned as American Idol, where he or she wins a recording contract worth up to $1 million. And the answer to our second question, it was on this day back in 1989 that Graceland opened a special display of cars owned by Elvis Presley. How many of Elvis's cars were on display? Was it just one, the pink Cadillac, or was it 10 of the cars he owned? Or was it C, just over 20 of Elvis's car, or D, almost all of the 97 cars owned by Elvis? Correct answer? Answer C, just over 20 of Elvis's cars. This Graceland exhibit was called the Autoland Museum, and it opened on this very day back in 1989. After signing his first record deal, Elvis purchased the 1955 Cadillac Fleetwood 60 that he had custom painted in pink for his beloved mother, who did not even have a driver's license. Today, the car is on display at the Automobile Museum in Graceland in Memphis, Tennessee. The car museum is located on Elvis Presley Boulevard near the famous Graceland Mansion, and its home is over 20 vehicles that the King had in his personal classic car collection. Besides the pink Cadillac, there's a 1975 Dino Ferrari, a 1956 Cadillac Eldorado convertible, a Stutz Blackhawk, a collection of Harley-Davidson motorcycles, and even the red MG featured in Blue Hawaii. So let's close today's program with a tribute to Dave Grohl's perseverance after literally breaking a leg at a concert on this day 7 years ago. Here are the Foo Fighters' Statues.
You and I were two old and tortured souls, repaired by a love of broken things. In a life, just some bodies growing old. No fear of the end of anything.
Well, we've run out of time for today's episode of Music Review. Be sure to tune in at the same time next week. This program's also available as a podcast after the broadcast in our website, ncreadingservice.org. As we leave you now, remember these words. Kindness is a language which blind people see and deaf people hear. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. If you have a suggestion for music to feature on this program, please leave a message for me at 919-832-5138. I'm Randy Thompson, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. Music Review, underwritten by Bill McClure. Tuning pianos in the Raleigh area since 1968. For more information or to schedule a piano tuning, please call 919-779-1755. So long. Until next time.
You and me.